typical church building, but it sure is beautiful. We're out here in a well-groomed city park, high on a hill looking out over a valley. I think it's really good to be here together. It's relatively quiet and peaceful. It's a little bit of traffic noise, kids running around. I've been out here in this space before dawn some mornings, and it is really quiet and peaceful then. I need this sort of peace and quiet in my life at times. I need it to center myself. I need it to help relieve stress. I need it to balance out some of the not so quiet and not so peaceful that happens in my life some days. Our ancestors searched out such places for themselves as well. Linda and I have just returned from some places similar to this in Ireland, where people many, many centuries ago built shelters for themselves as they pursued a life of solitude and meditation beyond the bothersome reach of warring tribal leaders and overly rigid and persnickety village neighbors. The shelters that still exist all these centuries later are built of rock, because that's what's there. They start with a little circle of stones and then stack them on top of each other, leaning into the center until they have a little igloo shape of rock. Each of those rocks is placed not just to support the rock above it, but to support all the building around it so that everything is all tied together. That's the only way they could have stayed in place all this time. If you crawl in through the one tiny little doorway, you can sit inside and the world outside sort of fades away. The world inside those little huts can seem quite small. It is small in terms of space. The rocks are stacked all around, almost within arm's reach, every one of them, and the shelter of the rocks above is just right at head level. When you sit inside, you can see how the bigger rocks are piled on top of the smaller ones, and it makes the wall that then becomes the ceiling. And then there's a lot of little smaller chips and chunks poked in between the larger rocks to fill the gaps and to try to stop all the wind and water from blowing through. If the space itself is small, the world inside those little stone huts is not small at all in terms of time. People were sitting in those very spaces, taking shelter, resting in the peace and quiet, contemplating the world around them and their place in it many, many, many centuries ago. And as I sat in those spaces, with the ceiling of carefully placed rocks right above my head, I could feel something that I thought must be the presence of those who had gone before so long ago. I imagined I could feel their prayers still reverberating in those spaces. I imagined those prayers like little slips of paper still resting in the spaces between the rocks, like the prayers of the people inserted in the cracks of the Wailing Wall at the ruins of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. These little round beehive huts are from the pre-Christian era. And a funny thing happened to building styles as time went on. The people still built with stones, because that's what they have in that part of the world. But the shape of the buildings began to change over time. First of all, they squared off the bottom course, so that the bottom of the building, the next buildings were square, but they still built an igloo out of it. Over time, they began to straighten up the walls. Pretty soon the walls were straight and they had to cover the roof with something else, wood or something lighter. So they would build flat roofs or peaked roofs. Almost all of those roofs are gone, those flat roofs and peaked roofs. That wood would have collapsed pretty quickly. But some of the stone walls of those ancient constructions still stand. And there are ruins like that all over Ireland apparently. Some of them houses and barns, but many of them are churches. Some of them are houses, even older houses of worship, where people practiced their religions in even older ways. I often had the same feeling standing or sitting in those ruined houses of worship as I had in the beehive huts. The prayers of the people who were obviously long gone physically but still spiritually present to me, their prayers still reverberated all around, even in a place where only a section or two of an ancient wall stood upright in the elements. Often these buildings were in places that could, by many measures, seem desolate. On lonely hillsides overlooking the sea, in broad valleys surrounded by steep and rocky mountains, in places where there was no distance between a sometimes harsh and unforgiving nature and the singular pilgrim or the small group of seekers. In touch with nature, yes. Quiet and peaceful, usually. Secluded, isolated, detached, certainly. And I understand, as I live my own life, the need for such states of solitude. However, if I love sitting in those places for a little while and getting in touch with my inner mountain hermit, I can't really imagine how those people stayed in those out-of-the-way places and away from all society over such long periods. The truth is, if I need peace and quiet and solitude in my life, I also need exuberance and celebration. If I love resting in those quiet places from time to time, I love coming home to all this exquisite torment even more. In a couple of hours, well, it's now about an hour and a half, maybe an hour or less, all of you are invited to march with one of our groups in the Pride Parade. If you're from Emerson or Elliott or First Church Alton or First Church St. Louis, just join one of our churches. We'll walk down Grand Avenue, a gathering on Grand a few blocks from here. But if you choose to march with one of us, be forewarned. It won't look or sound like this pastoral hillside setting in Tower Grove Park. It won't be quiet. It won't be peaceful. You'll have to leave the more contemplative aspects of nature far, far behind and enter the wild, wild world of the Pride Parade. Now, the buildings on either side of Grand Avenue are no longer small circular huts that were home to a few residents long ago. Those buildings are large brick and stone and glass edifices that today, on this Pride weekend, will hem in thousands and thousands of screaming and yelling and excited to be there revelers and party animals out to celebrate the freedom that comes with being able to publicly announce to all who you are and who you were created to be. This is an important celebration for so many people who have, by long-standing social contrivance, been stigmatized, been unable to announce to the world who they are, been unable to publicly be who they were created to be. Such a lack of peace and quiet, such a wild and crazy celebration makes complete and utter sense. If the only avenue open to you is a life of solitude and loneliness and hiding away your inner self, then when you finally can celebrate, the celebration is going to be raucous. If it gets a little wild, if it gets a little loud, if it gets a little crazy, I ask you to consider thinking about it this way. The exuberant shouts and songs of this celebration are a further expression of those prayers whispered by people on a lonely hillside millennia ago. They're a further expression of the prayers of the people spoken aloud and communally in those centuries-old ruins of churches Linda and I just encountered. And they're a further expression of our own prayers we say together in our own churches and when our communities of faith gather together for worship in a city park. Those prayers, as they always have been, are prayers that our basic humanity be acknowledged and our basic human needs addressed. That our inner selves be known and shared and our outer selves be afforded some dignity and respect. That our names be recognized, remembered, and included in the community of faith. This is one way to follow that great commandment that Jesus spoke of, to love yourself as your neighbor. First, to care for the balance between solitude and celebration in your own life, and then to care for your neighbor in the same way. So when you get that right, you naturally have gotten the loving God part right also. I think that's what God wants. If God is, in the language of the UU principles, the interconnected web of all existence of which we all are a part, then that interconnected web can't wait for us to love ourselves. It can't wait for us to love our neighbors. That interconnected web sings when we sing. It shouts when we shout. And it celebrates with us when we celebrate like we do today. Connection and inclusion and love.